Kung Deep Dive podcast on all things animation. My name is Andy. I will be your host for today. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Nadia.
Hello! For a minute, I was like, did you forget my name? That was a very long pause. Do you remember my name?
I think that was the first time I've done this introduction without a single pause or a but or an
Good job, Andy!
And this is also the first time that you've pointed out that I have paused on your name specifically.
Yep, so. It's because I was waiting. I was like, are you going to say my actual name, or is this going to be a jonky jonk where you're like, introduce me as someone else? But it was all good, all good.
No. How could I forget your name?
Well,
it's not like it's right in front of me on this Discord.
That's very true. But considering I just called one of the characters of a show I literally finished watching this morning by the wrong name, I feel like I can't judge others for forgetting stuff, you know?
So this bodes well for this episode.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Don't worry, I'm in tip-top shape. I did not spend all day trying to put an air conditioner unit in and just being really sweaty and gross. So my brain is ready to go.
But at least you're now sweaty, gross, and cool.
I'm getting there. I am not sitting in the room that has the AC in it, but I am sitting next to it. So I'm really hoping it kind of seeps in enough for me to cool down.
Gotta get that AC, just enough dead AC to cool down.
Gotta just, you know, gotta wave it in with my hands. Just gotta wave it in. Oh, but other than that, I'm doing very well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I stayed up till like 3 in the morning watching Bo Burnham's new special, because that's what I...
Oh my god. Damn, we should have talked about this before the podcast. I want to know what you think, but I also don't want to get too off topic.
What? Too off topic?
What did you think?
When are we ever on topic on this podcast?
That's very true. Did you stay up until 3 a.m. because you watched it and then were so devastated that you needed to watch an entire other movie before
Maybe.
You were ready to go to bed?
Maybe.
What movie soothed your soul?
I think it was just random YouTube videos.
Yeah. So, guessing we had a similar experience. So, what were your thoughts?
I love Bo Burnham. That was a lot.
Was it like a good a lot, bad a lot, or just neutral a lot?
I mean, it was a good a lot. I think.
Yeah.
I think Bo Burnham puts out a lot of good quality stuff, and this was definitely up there, but I'm so accustomed to the real world only seeping in a little through his stuff, and this was a lot more than a little.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It made me uncomfortable, which I think was the entire point.
Yeah, that was the point.
Which is the entire point. It doesn't... So, like, good job there. But, yeah, it's hard seeing the intimacy of someone that you usually get to see at a very curated distance. Right? Like, that is kind of the job of stand-up comedians, is to let you into their life and their world, but in a very curated and specific way, right? So you kind of feel like you know them, but you don't really. And this was like, nope, like, here's everything.
But it's also still very curated. Like, it's
exactly,
very...
Yeah.
I take it as very authentic, but he did produce the entire thing. He did edit the entire thing.
Yeah.
Everything that was on screen was there purposefully, and everything that was said purposefully.
So then do you think it also potentially could have been a commentary on how we curate distance but can also curate intimacy, and how we are not doing that? Because
I mean,
he's showing,
like,
that it's possible.
There was an entire song about specifically that.
Yeah.
Called White Woman's Instagram.
True.
I feel like that was the entire point of that song. So yeah, that is what I think he is saying, yes.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. But yeah, I really liked it.
But anyway, speaking of comedians who made their way on the internet and eventually got national television spots.
Great transition, I like it.
Yeah, the show we're covering today is Final Space, a show by TBS, or initially produced by TBS, created by Olin Rogers, who is a YouTube funny man. He does the funny YouTube things. Do you want to do a quick summary?
Oh
I should
God,
ask
I
quick
don't even
summary.
know how to summarize.
I
So much of the first season went by in like such a blur. I will give it a go. I will give it an honest try.
mean, this show is very fast-paced. I think
Yeah.
it's very difficult to like.
Here's what I okay, hold on, hold on. Here we go, here we go. Final Space follows Gary Goodspeed, a prisoner aboard a ship in space, and his found family as they attempt to save the universe. I feel like that's pretty
Yeah, that's pretty
all-encompassing.
good.
Yeah, do you want to give it a go?
Okay. Final Space is a show that follows Gary Goodspeed, a wanted criminal who destroyed 99 Imperial starships and a small family-owned Mexican taqueria, who is then exiled for his crimes, and whilst in exile, befriends a massive world destroy a small massively powerful world destroying creature and tries to save him from the evil man to get all the evil things into the thing.
Yeah, and save the universe and his
All the
friends
earth.
and
I guess
his
the universe owns
well
more.
and well ha 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 and his friends along the way.
All right. So, what were your initial thoughts on the show Final
Okay,
Space?
so I went into the show knowing essentially nothing, which is what you told me to do. I did do a very quick Google image search just to kind of like see what the animation was like before I went into it because I was curious. And I thought that it was about space zombies because of some of the things that I saw. So I kept waiting in the first season for there to be space zombies, and then they weren't. And I was like, oh, whoops, that was just me seeing a bunch of corpses in space and thinking they were zombies. But nope, they were just dead people. So that was what I thought going in. I think this was like a really mixed bag of a show for me. There were a lot of things about it that I really, really genuinely enjoyed and respected and like look forward to in the third season. And then there were a lot of things that just completely didn't land for me and didn't work. So I feel like overall watching it is a nice experience. Like I want to know what happens. I will watch the third season. I enjoy watching it with Larry. He really likes it, so we like talk about it as we go along. But it's definitely a show with a lot of kind of imperfections that seem counter to the stuff that I really enjoy about it. It felt kind of like there were three people working on it with three very different goals who never really quite figured out how to work together, if that makes sense.
I think that's a very good way of
Yeah,
putting
and I
that.
think I really like what one of them is doing. One of them I completely despise, and the other one is kind of hit or miss. So, like, depend. That's so. That was my experience. That's what I got going on for me.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned prior, Final Space is a show that was created by Olin Rogers. It was Olin Rogers's brainchild for, I believe this show had been in the works for nearly a decade.
Yeah, I was really surprised when I briefly, very, very briefly looked up and was like, oh, wow, that's been a while.
Olin.
Ah, first name basis, huh?
Olin, my good friend Olin. So, fun fact, I actually met Olin Rogers in 2012.
Whoa.
He opened for he opened for Mika Kitty at the House of Blues in
Does
Boston.
he do music or just stand up?
He just does he did stand up.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, his whole he has a YouTube channel and he's had his YouTube channel since I believe 2010. He'd seen some popularity on YouTube and has it done very well with the things that he puts up on YouTube and it's mostly very well produced short films, or just him sitting down and telling a story. I think one of his most popular uploads is literally a story about how he pooped in a Target once.
Oh my God.
It's
I
amazing.
love it. That sounds
It
fantastic.
is It is called Ghost in the Stalls. I would absolutely
Oh my
recommend
God.
going out and listening
Okay,
to
yeah,
it. I think that is one of
I haven't seen any of or heard any of his YouTube stuff, but I appreciate how just thinking about it is making you laugh, so that bodes well.
And his style of storytelling is very evident in this show. If you listen to any of his YouTube videos, if you listen to any of his stories that he tells, the humor that he gets and the way that he talks, it comes through in a lot of the aspects of this show. So this show is very much like his brainchild. He's worked very hard to get this off the air. And I watched a lot of this happen from the start. I remember when Olin released the initial pilot for this show that he pitched, and he released it on YouTube, and it was discovered by Conan O'Brien and picked up. Conan helped Olin pitch this show to a number of execs, and it turned into a bidding war between like six different companies that TBS eventually won.
Oh.
Anyway, season one aired on TBS. Season two, I believe, was still funded by TBS, but eventually started airing on Adult Swim. And throughout the course of this, Olin has been very open with just how much meddling the executives on either end have been messing with the flow of the show and how he felt like that show should be going.
Oh, interesting. I am very curious to hear more about that when we get to the spoiler section, because it's always really interesting to hear the behind the scenes, because like you can surmise, and like Larry and I had a whole conversation last night about some of the stuff we didn't like, and we were kind of like going back and forth about whose fault we thought it was, and eventually I was like, honestly, listen, like we don't know enough about like TV production to even remotely have this conversation in a like grounded way.
Yeah, and to be fair, we neither of us work on this show. Neither of us were here for any of this. We are simply here with the product that has been given to us and discussing it as the product that has been established.
Yeah, but I'm curious to know where he has revealed things have been meddled with.
And I went into this with a strong love for Olin Rogers and his work. He does some very good things on his YouTube channel and off his YouTube channel. And I think that once this show hits its stride, it is genuinely amazing. And there are times in this show where it really connects. And I think those are the scenes that really feel like they are Olin Rogers' work based off of what he's done in the past.
So I'm going to kind of gather that when I said it felt like there were three people working on it at once, that Olin Rogers is the one that I probably like.
I would say go watch some of his YouTube videos.
Okay.
I would actually, if we want to take a moment now, we can watch the Final Space pilot to have that as a bit of context, because
Ooh,
this is
okay, yeah.
functionally this show without any network interference. This is what he envisioned the show to be from the start. First off, being a completely independent project, that is amazingly animated.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see that a lot of the aspects of his initial idea did go through. And when this show came out in 2018, I jumped on the chance to watch it from like week to week. And I think I got like three or four episodes in, and it didn't, I don't know, I didn't really enjoy it as much as I thought I would. And it wasn't until recently that I just said, I'm gonna sit down, I'm gonna watch this entire thing. I love Olin Rogers. Is the work he's been putting on YouTube has been slowly lessening and lessening as he's doing more work for this TV show, which is reasonable. And I guess I do want to preface this all by saying, like, Olin, if you're listening, I love your work. I love what you do. I'm going to be somewhat critical of your work, and I want this all to be constructive as much as possible. But going through the first season, I felt very much the same way you did. There are definitely aspects of this show, both in the first and the second season, that really work for me. When this show needs to hit its emotional beats, when this show needs to do very specific things with the story, it does those things very well. But those very good aspects of the show are wedged in between some of the most obnoxious and poorly written aspects of the show, and it's interesting. I can't quite say that this is a show I would recommend to everyone.
Oh yeah, no, not everyone. I do think it's still a show I would recommend. I would probably recommend it with a couple of like caveats.
Yeah,
and I also think that it's definitely something that some people are going to enjoy way more than me. Some people are going to enjoy way less than me. It's just like, it is specific.
I do think this is a show that a lot of people are sleeping on. I don't see a whole lot of discussions of this show in the general media. I don't see this show being marketed a whole lot, nor do I see like a whole lot of people really know about the show in general. I think this is a show that should have a much larger fan base than it actually does.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that.
But I don't think it's a show that is for everyone. I think if I were to sit down and recommend this, it would be with several caveats. And it would be to someone who has a bit of endurance for obnoxious characters and the more generic, almost Family Guy-esque humor. I think it is worrisome that it is going to Adult Swim because it does fall into a lot of the tropes Adult Swim tends to fall into. And I don't think that that's necessarily Adult Swim's fault. I think a lot of the shows that give Adult Swim that Adult Swim vibe are shows that started elsewhere and had that vibe elsewhere and eventually came to Adult
Swim. Okay, so what is up with that vibe? I, like, can't figure out how to name it. I don't even know how to describe it. But, like, how is it that we have all of these shows that have this, like, weird, obnoxious Adult Swim-y humor? Because I just hate it. And I, like, don't know how to name what about it I don't like. I don't know how to give, like,
you know what it is?
What is it? Please help me. Help me find words.
I think it's The Simpsons. I think it is entirely The Simpsons' fault. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for The Simpsons, nor do I think The Simpsons is a bad show. Prior to Principal of the Pauper, anything past that is subjective. But I think The Simpsons came out in a time frame when animation was solely viewed as a children's format. And The Simpsons did very well that a whole lot of shows tried to emulate that style and that the kind of comedy writing that comes out of this. I think after years of having the only successful animated adult shows be things like Simpsons, Family Guy, American Dad, Archer, like it's all comedies to some degree. And some better than others. These were all successful shows, and they all had varying degrees of success and varying degrees of humor in them. And I'm not going to comment on any of those, because those are their own conversations all on their own. But I do believe that established history of humor in adult animation means that more and more large TV execs, like the execs you would find at your TBS, at your FX, at your Cartoon Network, at your Adult Swim, aren't going to be content with putting out content that isn't that.
Hmm.
Or, at the very least, putting out content that isn't that, that also does not have an established franchise.
Yeah.
I think the fact that Final Space is a completely original project from a completely brand new creator, or at least brand new to the TV, to the large scale sense, meant that it needed to be pitched as such. And this show was never going to not be comedic, that Olin Rogers is a comedian, that's what he does.
Yeah, and I do like some aspects of the humor. It's just like so much of it doesn't hit, and there's like a very specific, and I have like some specific things to talk about later, but like the pilot made me laugh I think more than the entire series did. I really liked that balloon joke, that like that hit with me really
what
well
are these limp carcasses because, of sadness?
And I think okay and I actually we can kind of talk about this a little bit without spoilers, but I think it's because that's a joke that doesn't come at anyone's expense. That's a joke that is just funny because you expect something to happen and it just doesn't quite happen, and the fact that a bunch of balloons fell down without anyone thinking to blow them up is just kind of silly and ridiculous. But I think so much of the humor in this show happens either at the expense of a character, or it's funny because it's gruesome. And neither of those are things that I typically find funny in general. So, like, a lot of it doesn't work for me because it doesn't make me laugh. It just makes me go, like, aw, that's a little sad.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I don't necessarily think it's specifically in terms of, like, the pain-inflicted humor, because there is a bit of that I do enjoy, like the bit where Gary's like, why did they think to put nerve endings into this metal arm?
Yeah, and that's funny because it's like, it's a little thing that happens, but it's not like super traumatic. But there's a lot of humor of this in the show of like someone that you don't care about dying in a really gruesome way, or like a bunch of sea turtles hitting the window of a ship as it's swimming through the ocean, and you just get like a solid minute of like sea turtle guts, and it's just like, why? This is just horrific and not, like, in no way is this funny. And then you get a lot of like weird genital and like potty humor.
I mean, the show has a literal pissing contest.
Yeah, which that didn't work for me at all. And there are also jokes about like drinking pee, which like, why? Why? Why is that here? And believe me, like, I loved Captain Underpants. You and me both agree. Like, when it's done, I'm not averse to potty humor in general. I just think that it is so counter to like the other aspects of the show. And I think, okay, here's another thing that I think. I think that my issue is also that the humor of the show takes up so much time that could have been spent doing something more worthwhile with the characters, with the plot, with the relationships, with the momentum. So like, not only does the humor not hit for me, but then I get this like other layer of being angry that it's there instead of something that I know could be better because there are other parts of the show that are.
You know what it is? And I'm literally just putting this thought together right now.
Oh good. Oh boy.
So this may be a half-formed thought.
Oh boy, oh boy.
But what I think it is, like you said, this is multiple creators trying to do multiple things and they're all adverse to each other. And I think that the more crass humor that works because it serves a purpose to the story or the world building.
Yes.
What this should be, while comedic, is a serious take on the cosmic fantasy world. And the comedy should come from, oh, this is a giant titan, but he kind of talks like just a chill dude.
Yeah.
But I'm going to drink piss has nothing to do with that. That does not add anything to the world. That does not give you anything. It doesn't advance what this world and what the cosmic fantasy is trying to establish. Like, this does nothing for me.
Yeah, and I think unlike Invincible, where, because we talked about that show last time, but like Invincible uses the gore in a really, really intentional way, whereas I think this show uses gore to be funny. And I'm like trying to figure out how to say this, because this is also a half-formed thought, because I think a lot of the stuff that happens in the show is really intense and really traumatizing and has like really lasting impact. So like, it doesn't make sense for it to be like a super squeaky clean show with no violence, because a lot of the stuff that's happening is big and bad and is going to have like astronomical outcomes that are violent. But it's the fact that violence is used as comedic beats, as opposed to beats to hit at the impact of what's happening, right? Like, I think the one thing I'm thinking of is, I don't think this is really a spoiler, but like, there's one joke where like somebody gets pushed out of a plane to get to their wedding and they just splat on the ground and spray guts all over their bride, and the bride starts like sobbing, and I'm like, why is this being used as a joke? Like, that's horrible.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And here's the thing, is like, the setup for that joke works. Like, I think it's really funny to have like, oh, this is just a random alien who's like, he just needs to get somewhere, and he tries to mug someone, but he's just like super polite about it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah, no, come, we'll be your friend, we'll get you there. Like, that totally works as a joke. And then, again, that's something that, like, adds to the world building. This is the kind of world where that kind of thing can happen.
Yeah.
But to end it with them just throwing him off a plane and then just forgetting about it, it's...
Yeah, like, it could have...
I think it's very much like, I don't know where I was going with that. I was interrupting. Please continue.
Sorry, no, but it would have been really, really funny if, right, for like this sketchy alien to be on the plane and them to all just be like treating him like he's telling the truth, and you as an audience are like, oh God, no, like he's gonna do something horrible, he's gonna steal your ship, and then it ends with him like being at a wedding with a big celebration, and then you are kind of like the comedy is you confronting your own assumptions and being like, oh, haha, funny. He was just a chill dude, look at him at his wedding. Also, now I have to think about the assumptions that I made about him, and it does sort of build the world. Like, it gives these characters lives beyond the moments that you see them in, and it also then would make the action more impactful because you, in the back of your head, are like seeing these people whose world may or may not be ending as like people with little moments like that wedding, right? So it serves multiple purposes, but it was just like a weird cop-out moment. I was like, what? Also, then I was just sad. Like, that's horrible. So, anyway, those are some examples of stuff that I don't like.
So yeah, to wrap up my recommendations, shows like this are a very good reason as to why I want to avoid giving like an out of 10 or an out of 5 or some number of star score, because I don't think that would be reflective of the whole show.
Yeah.
I think it would be very difficult for me to give a solid number to a show that I feel has aspects of 9 out of 10 and 3 out of 10. And this is a show that I do genuinely see a lot of potential in.
Yeah, and I'm gonna continue watching it for sure.
I think for the most part, it is overall good, and I am going to continue watching. I think season 3, from what Olin has been fairly public about, is much more in line with his vision than what seasons 1 and 2 were. And that is the vision that I want to see. And I'm
Yeah.
very much looking forward to seeing it. As of the recording of this, it is currently airing on Adult Swim, but probably by the time this comes out, it will be done. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm excited for season 3 too, and I'm definitely going to keep watching it. Okay, oh, I have a thing. Okay. I think I would recommend this show to like, oh, I'm going to try to say this in a respectful way. Please cut this out if I fail in doing that.
I won't.
I would recommend this to a bunch of, you know, like those dude bros who are like obsessed with Rick and Morty and are like not at all able to confront their toxic masculinity. I would recommend the show to them because I think the humor would pull them through, but they would also get the emotion and the relationships that I don't think they get from the other crappy Adult Swim comedies or from Rick and Morty for that matter, not to crap on another show that I don't like, but that's who I would recommend the show to. Because I think it holds this like really unique place in like it has these moments that are super emotional and it like pushes the boundaries of the role that men can have in each other's lives, which I think is super valuable. I think we need more of that in our media. So if the crappy humor gets people who wouldn't initially watch a show like that to get through the show, that I think is something that has like a weirdly unique niche value. I do not think that was the intention necessarily of the show or Olin Rogers, but I don't know. I think it could fill a little space there. Do you see what I'm putting down? Does
I
that make any
do. I
sense?
understand what you're saying. I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, nuts.
I think that specifically the Rick and Morty fandom is a bit different in that regard. I think the jokes that are told in Rick and Morty specifically tend to be like very different from what you would see in your average adult animation. I also think that shows like this and the issues that went on behind the scenes for this are specifically why adult animation needs to not just solely be comedic. I am someone who loves humorous adult comedy. I've seen all of Archer. I love Archer. I've seen all of Rick and Morty. I have mixed feelings, but mostly positive feelings towards Rick and Morty. I grew up with The Simpsons and Family Guy and American Dad and Bob's Burgers, and have, again, varying feelings on all of those, but for the most part, positive. And I get it. I understand why a network like TBS or Adult Swim would feel the need to put these jokes in there. But it feels like if we continue to encourage these kinds of jokes, then shows will continue to need these jokes as a crutch to be able to tell their more serious stories.
That's fair.
So, moving forward, we will be discussing Final Space seasons 1 and 2 with no restraint on spoilers. The entire 2 seasons are currently available on HBO Max. The 3rd season is currently airing on Adult Swim. It may not be by the time I finish editing this, who knows? Hopefully it'll be on HBO Max and we can just binge the whole thing. If this style of show is something that you genuinely want to listen to, genuinely want to watch, and what we've said has not turned you off from it, please give it a listen. It's actually quite good when it needs to be. I guess another, I think I might edit this back into my recommendations, but I think one demographic that I think this hits that does not have nearly enough attention paid towards it are individuals who are looking for your large cosmic fantasy with like Lovecraftian titans and creatures from other dimensions.
Yeah.
These kinds of stories are either long-spanning and very difficult to get into with a very high entry point, or not good. And I think that this show gives for a good establishment of that kind of world without it being super difficult to get into.
That's a good point. I actually do talk all the time about how I want more like fantasy shows that are easier to watch, and this is a great example of that, so I guess it weirdly fills that space for me and Larry, too.
You're welcome!
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out.
So anyway, spoilers. We can now spoil the thing. I don't know where I sit on this show in terms of pacing. I think that it's a very fast-paced show, and at times it feels almost breakneck.
Yeah, I had a hard time following some of the stuff in the first season for that reason. Like, I'd look down for a minute and I'd pop back up and I'd be like, oh my god, what's happening? Or like some big thing would happen and I'd be like, this I'm sure has a big impact, but I like couldn't put my hand on the like little moments that led up to it, and it was hard for me to like contextualize what was going on and like what the fault, like, you know, like what led up to things and what the fallout would be of big moments. But I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with that. I think sometimes it is nice to have a show that moves quickly. Like, I mean, some of my favorite movies are really fast, like the Lego Movie and like the Mitchells versus the Machines are both super fast-paced movies, and I do really like that. I think my issue was more with that sometimes the pacing made it hard for me to follow what was happening, and also that the pacing of the second season is so different for me than the pacing of the first that it like it kind of like threw me off when the second season started because it felt so different.
That's absolutely fair. And I do think you definitely see the change between the first and the second season. I think the execs saw a good amount of feedback from the first season and really tried to course correct in the second season to minimal avail. I guess we should talk about Gary.
He is the main character.
Gary, in the first season, comes off as kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
And not very likable, which is not something that you want out of your main character. I guess you could have an unlikable main character, but it's almost to the point where it feels like you just don't want him on the screen at times.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because his voice actor is Olin Rogers. And I believe Olin voices a number of characters in this show, from Gary to Tribor to
Mooncake!
A number of side characters.
Mooncake's voice acting is so amazing. I am obsessed. I'm obsessed with Mooncake. I would put my life on the line for Mooncake. I think that the humor that comes from Mooncake is probably some of the humor that I enjoy the most, because he's just so silly and like so expressive for something that is literally like a ball with two little legs and antennae. And so like when you see him do things or like express in different ways, like those are little moments of like joyous humor. Like, and I love that. I love Mooncake very much. Which
Mooncake
is funny,
because
he's kind of like the polar opposite of Gary in season one. Like, season one Mooncake is just so pure and adorable, and season one Gary is just like, why?
They sort of lampshade just how annoying he is in the little pre-talk in season two.
Yeah, they like weirdly break the fourth wall, which they like, I don't think have done, they didn't ever do that before, and I don't think they've done it after.
Well, not really. They do kind of, I believe every episode has like a previously on, or yeah, I think all of the previously on sort of talk directly to the audience.
Oh, okay. But
I think that's the first time where they like, that previously on sort of acknowledges that there's an outside world. Usually it's like, oh no, what are we going to do now?
Yeah.
Instead of, oh hey, Reddit exists.
Yeah, also people think I'm annoying.
Yeah, like, it's not that that's the first and only time that they break the fourth wall. I do think that they technically break the fourth wall at the beginning of all of the previously ons, because they're talking directly to the audience. But it is the first time that there's an acknowledgement of an audience.
Yeah, and I guess like the format of the previously ons is one that I'm just so used to from shows that I had never really even thought about it as breaking the fourth wall. I was just like, oh yeah, like this is just a thing that shows do. Whereas that moment where Gary talks about how people on Reddit think he's annoying was like so weirdly like direct. I don't know. It just, it like felt different to me.
Yeah, but yeah. It felt more fourth wall breaky than the usual fourth wall break that you're accustomed to.
Yeah, exactly.
But Gary does soften for me. And I think even throughout season one, he does tend to soften on me. And I do kind of enjoy his cadence, the way he's constantly like, I'm going to try and compare this to something. It doesn't always land, but when it does well. And I do believe that season one has a number of moments where Gary really needs to, like, sit down and come to terms with something.
Mm-hmm.
And those moments do really work.
Yeah.
Like, even in episode one, where he first meets Mooncake and he's having that flashback to his father giving him a caterpillar and having it named Mooncake, like, I believe it's literally, like, one line that he says, and it's just the word Mooncake, but it's delivered so well. Like, Olin Rogers is a very talented voice artist. And while the character of Gary does come off as annoying at times, it is definitely helped that Olin Rogers is the one to voice him.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about Avocado?
I don't really know. I feel like, I mean, he isn't really in season two in a capacity where he's like Avocado the way that we know from season one.
I guess we should talk about the Cottos together.
Yeah, because I feel like Avocado separate has kind of like gone out of my mind. Like I can't, which I guess says something, right? The fact that he didn't really stick in my head after being gone for a season.
I think that's more because Avocado, at least for the most part of season one, is sort of the straight man of the group.
Yeah.
Like his role in the group is you have this ridiculous, fast talking, trying to make a quip at every moment main character, and Avocado's supposed to be the sort of pulse to rein back in that wildness, and it works to a degree.
Character,
yeah.
I think that he's also the first character that we really see Gary develop a like mutual relationship with, where like they have a rapport back and forth, and I think that is part of what starts to soften Gary for me, right? Seeing him have a buddy that he cares about and is willing to like work with and for.
Yeah, and I do think like Gary's sort of manicness does have at least an in-universe explanation in that he's been on this ship for 5 years completely on his own.
Alone.
Like, you'd start to develop some quirks if you had to go through that yourself. Like, this is not unexplained, and I think Avocado specifically gives you a very good sense of what your, not necessarily average person, because he is a mercenary at secondhand to the Lord Commander at one point in his life, but not everyone in this world is like Gary. Not everyone is trying to make these quips, trying to make these humorous jokes left and right. Some people are just there to get from point A to point B, and like, Avocado is that person. He comes in, he has a goal, he wants to save his son, and he's going to do what he needs to do to make that happen. No quips, no humor, that's what he needs. And Gary, being someone there to support him and be there for him in those times, I think is a good dynamic. I think they do a good job, and I think the character of Avocado is an acknowledgement that you do need someone to temper Gary a bit.
And I also think, like, the familial relationships are like a big part of the show. So to have sort of this contrast of Gary and his relationship with his father and Avocado and his relationship with Lilcotto helps to solidify this pattern of like, okay, we are looking at and we're unpacking and we're honoring the relationships between fathers and sons. Like, it's not just Gary and his dad. We have this other duo that is there to show that this is a pattern and this is a focus. And I think that that's also useful.
Oh, you know what this is?
Wow.
This is me harping back to the conversation we had before when we were like, where is this? I think this might just be what I want this show to be, but in terms of like what this show should be, like the way we're talking about how it needs to like take the cosmic element seriously and the humor should derive from that instead of just being haha piss.
Yeah.
The show should be, and it kind of is, just Doctor Who but animated.
I mean, kind of. If you take away all the shitty humor, I guess. I mean, there. And the time travel is kind of like less intentional.
Yeah, but like the time travel isn't necessarily like the aspect of that that's important, right? Like you have a quirky individual who has a group of companions and they go on adventures.
Yes, but I think the difference is that, like, there's a separation between the Doctor and his companions, whereas here you have a show where Gary is more on the same level as the people that he's with.
Is that true? Gary's kind of essentially a chosen one. I believe this is a chosen one narrative.
Really?
When Gary goes to talk to Bolo, the Titan Bolo, he's like, "You are the chosen one. You are the one to save the universe in every iteration of it." And he gives him that speech while he's showing him all the different Garys from all the different universes. And I think there's a point where even well, no, when Olin, not Olin, Gary, when Gary goes to the rift in Final Space and tries to talk to Quinn, Quinn is like, "Invictus is searching for you specifically. You are the chosen one. He is trying to get to you."
Yeah, I don't know. I still have a hard time with the. I don't know. I have a hard time connecting the Doctor with. I mean, I get it in terms of like the relationships and the saving and the space, but I don't know. I feel like they're
I'm
all
not saying it's a
used.
direct one-to-one connection, but there is definitely like in terms of like the general feel for the show, I think that that's what the show wants to be. I'm not saying it is that because like the shitty humor is still there. Like we never see anyone drink piss in Doctor Who.
Thank God.
At least not that I'm aware of. I have not kept up with that show. I don't know what the current iteration of the Doctor is doing. I would hope that they don't make Jodie Whittaker drink piss.
That would be a really unfortunate way to welcome in the first female doctor. I'd be really, haha, I'd be pissed if that was the direction that they took. Lol, lol, lol.
Like, I haven't seen Doctor Who since Capaldi took the reins.
Yeah, and I stopped
So,
before that.
did you? I thought you watched all of.
No, I think I got midway through Matt Smith, and then I was like,
That's fair. That's absolutely fair. I mean, the show lost a lot of quality in the Matt Smith era, and
Yeah. Oh,
it.
I think I stopped right when Rory and what's her face stopped being companions, and I didn't see the
Amy?
next companion. Yeah, Amy. I just also hated Amy, but like I didn't get once they left, I didn't get to the next companion, so I think that's
Got
where I
it.
stopped.
But yeah, I think in terms of the general feel of the show, I think that's what it wants to be.
I can kind of see that.
And like you do get, I think the time travel is more just coincidental. And like it's weird, like the main character being a time traveler, I don't think that time travel is necessarily one of the biggest needs for something to feel Doctor Who-ish to me. Like, at least within the realm of Doctor Who, this is going to turn into a Doctor Who podcast. But I think at least within the realms of Doctor Who, the time travel is more a device to get this quirky individual into different situations that can be done without time travel.
Okay, I kind of see this as like Voltron, but I'll probably finish it, is how I've been looking at it in my head. It's like got your space, it's got your found family, it's got jokes that don't really work, it's got weird, convoluted bits that work and bits that don't, but I like Final Space more than I
Are you
did
telling me that Doctor
Voltron.
Who doesn't have weird, convoluted bits that work and bits that don't?
Okay, well, yeah,
And
it does,
you're
and it's
telling me
also
that
got the
Doctor Who
found
isn't something that you're
family.
gonna finish?
So, really, yeah, that's true. But I would definitely lump Voltron in with it.
You know, that's fair. Because Voltron is a bit of a cosmic fantasy.
Yeah, with found
With
family,
found, yeah, no, I
with
see the.
relationships that were both kind of weirdly questionable about, with characters who sometimes kind of just meld into being non-characters, which I get from some of the like new entry, like the characters that join season two who don't really have much depth.
Well, speaking of relationships that we're both not entirely happy about, do you want to talk about Quinn for a moment?
Yeah, because I have that was like the weird. So I think like some of the moments of the show that I really, really like are moments between Quinn and Gary. Like I think there are parts that are done really well, and some of those parts are between them, but I also there are bits that like aren't done well, and it's like this weird thing where I don't even know how to talk about it. But like I think the moment that I really started to actually think about their relationship as something that I thought the showrunners were doing something like actively good with was, I mean, it's like kind of at the end of season one, but like the moment where Quinn and Gary are getting ready to deploy the bomb to shut the rift into final space, and Gary is going to do it, and Quinn is like, no, I want to do it. And Gary's like, no, I can't. Like, I can't lose you. I want to do it. And she's like, listen, like, this has been my life's work. This is my purpose. I am going to do it. And he lets her. And he's like, yep, you're right. Here you go. And I really like that because it felt so counter to all of these other narratives where you have a woman who's like, I want to do a thing. And a man who is like, no, I know, I'll do it instead. And they're like, no, I want to do it. And they're like, no, but it's better if I do it. And then they do it and are supposed to be all heroic and great. And you're like, you just completely ignored the wishes of somebody who's like actively trying to tell you to do something. And we're all supposed to be okay with that. And this show did the opposite, which I was very happy about. And like actually gave Quinn the chance to have agency over that choice and that moment. And also gave like Gary the points of listening and respecting and doing something that was really painful to him because he like cared about Quinn to the extent where he was able to conceive of a world without her because he knew that she was the one who wanted to deploy the bomb. That's like a very convoluted way of saying that I just really liked that moment. And
no, that was a very good moment.
Yeah, and I wish there was more of those moments because that would have helped me understand the relationship more up until that point. Because like if that's the point for me where I really started to be like, oh, okay, I am respecting what's happening in this relationship, it's pretty freaking late in the game for that to happen.
That's absolutely true. And I think that that is the way that this relationship started. It makes it very difficult for that relationship to be realistic, to not come, or at least for that relationship to be good and well written.
Yeah.
For that point to not come until very late into the game, because Gary starts that relationship off by accidentally cryogenically freezing a man in a bathroom stall and then hitting on someone with false pretenses as he is dressed in an Infinity Guard uniform that he does not own, and that directly leads into his exile.
Yeah, actively putting her in danger by trying to fly a plane that he doesn't know how to fly and then, like, exploding a bunch of ships instead.
And a small family-owned Mexican taqueria.
And a small family-owned Mexican taqueria, which is, in my opinion, the real tragedy there. And then creating videos to her every single day of his exile, which is, like, weird and creepy.
And that's the one thing that softens Quinn to Gary initially, is Hugh sits her down and is like, watch these videos of Gary writing you a video diary every single day.
Which is super weird because like for me, the point of that was like her seeing Gary beyond the facade, right? So like the fact that he was speaking them to her, it was almost inconsequential. Like, it shouldn't have mattered who he was directing these things to. The whole point was that, like, Quinn had seen him as this sort of douche guy who covers stuff up with jokes and doesn't care for others and is just kind of, like, going through life selfishly, which makes sense considering how she met him and the way that he typically presents to people on the outside. And so seeing the videos was a moment of her seeing his vulnerability, seeing his weakness, seeing his care for himself and others, and like thinking beyond that projection of like douchiness. And so he didn't have to be saying them to her. Like, I feel like it could have been more impactful if he were writing these diaries to his dad, right? Like, that's the other relationship that we know Gary has, and we don't really know of any relationships beyond that, and that could be the point. Like, Gary could not have people he cares about on Earth. It could really just be his dad and his idea of Quinn. But if he had done the video diaries to his dad, that would have strengthened our, like, the impact of the relationship he has with her. It would have been way less creepy when he and Quinn actually met in real life. And it would have still had that same impact of Quinn softening to Gary by seeing his vulnerability.
That would resolve my biggest issue that I have with this, which is I take an issue with rewarding a character for establishing a relationship in his mind, never wavering from that established relationship, and then eventually just brute forcing his way into establishing that relationship.
Yeah. Also, it makes it really hard to trust that he actually likes Quinn because he met her for like 5 minutes and all of them were her not knowing who he actually was. So like, okay, we get to see those moments of Quinn understanding who Gary is through the videos, but we don't really ever see Gary understanding who Quinn is beyond his, like, fantasy of her.
I do believe that we do see Gary growing in a way that he could not if he did not have that relationship.
Yeah.
In season two, when Gary is left alone with Nightshade... Nightfall? Did I just do it?
I've corrupted your mind by making...
No! Why would you do this to me? But when Gary is left alone with Nightfall, he can't see himself committing to that relationship because he's acknowledging that it's not Quinn.
Yeah, which was such a beautiful, amazing moment.
That is not something that you could do if you did not view Quinn as a person and simply as a reward, because this is functionally the same person. If you really had that mindset of, I'm just here for the name and the face, then that scene wouldn't make sense. But because Gary is truly seeing Quinn for who Quinn is, and I believe truly cares for Quinn for who Quinn is at that point in the show, he says no. He can't commit to that relationship. And I think this show does a weird thing with time for me, where it feels like it's paced in a way where you're with the character. It feels like you're with the characters from start to finish. But the way that the story is presented is that's clearly not true.
Yeah.
When Lil Cotto goes into Avocado's room for the first time, you see an assortment of things from an assortment of different battles. And I believe at one point they flash back to different battles that they did not show in the show prior. So even, I believe from episode one, there are gaps in between episodes that we just don't get to see. And I think that there's a significant amount of time that passes where Quinn and Gary really get to know each other that just isn't shown on screen.
And this is another great example of how they would have had time to show those amazing intimate moments had they not had a bunch of crappy humor. If they had just taken some of those jokes and shown a conversation or something, like, for the love of God. But, and, like, I have no issue with Quinn and Gary. Like, I do. I think that their relationship makes sense. I think that it shows growth for Gary. I mean, hopefully we'll see it with showing growth for Quinn, but we don't get Quinn for, like, pretty much all of season two, so it's hard to say what that will look like moving forward. And again, this is the thing where, like, they do so many things so well, but it's these little choices that just, like, throw it off kilter for me. It's kind of like, okay, here's a weird metaphor. Here's how I'm thinking about it. It's like, you know when you spin a top and it's spinning around and you touch it with your finger and it wobbles before continuing to spin?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. The show is like that top where it's doing a good thing and then there are just these moments where the finger comes in and wobbles the top. And like Quinn and Gary's relationship is like that for me, where like it has so many things that work and so many things that hit and so many things that show like the importance of intimacy and growth and getting to another person. And like there's the moment where the earth is like falling apart and they've gotten together again, and it's this like big influx of emotion. And in any other show, these characters would kiss and they just hug here, and I thought that was really great and really intimate and like showed that they had been developing this relationship that was beyond just the sexual and that they like truly cared for one another. But then you get all the weird moments before with Gary being creepy, and like, had they just made one small other choice, it wouldn't have been creepy. But like, they did it. Why did they do it?
Even going into that, Gary doesn't, when Gary's talking to Quinn, and that initial start of they're going to be in a relationship and that initial conversation of we're going to talk about this seriously, he doesn't do that thing that he always does where he pretends like this is already a done deal. He's like, hey, would you like to go have an alcoholic beverage?
Mm-hmm.
Great that he's doing this while under fire of multiple assailants, but it is an established of it, or it is an acknowledgement of the fact that he has not started this relationship and that he needs to start small, and he knows that he needs to build from there. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that I need to justify him asking Quinn out under these conditions after all of these very questionable lead-in to that relationship. But I don't hate that they end up together. I do like where that relationship ends up at the end of season one, and I do think that they do a good job slowly leading into it, and they do a good job of establishing that Gary has seen Quinn as a person and as someone who he has to care for and respect as a person and not just as a reward, which is what it feels more like in the beginning of season one. The issue that I take with it is it feels like you're rewarding his actions from start to finish, when in reality, we can only really be rewarding the actions towards the end.
Yeah. No, I think that is super, super fair. Season one and season two are interesting because they felt super, super different for me for, like, a lot of reasons. Let me solidify this in my head. I think one of the reasons is that we have a lot of sort of character turnover. So, like, the Lord Commander isn't in season two at all. We don't have Avocado in season two and the end of season one, but like we really don't have him in season two, and Lil Cotto becomes a bigger character. We don't have Quinn, and then we have these sort of like three, oh, we have Hugh, who like feels like a totally different character. We have Gary, who we've already kind of mentioned, but like feels like a different character. We have Nightshade instead of Quinn, or Nightfall. Oh my god, I'm never gonna get this right. We have Nightfall instead of Quinn, who literally is a different character. And then we have Clarence and Fox and Ash. So we have like the introduction of these new characters, and then we have Ava, who's like the new AI who kind of like replaces Hugh because Hugh is now different. I don't know, but like all of the characters have these weird different iterations of themselves that we get in season two, and then we get these new characters who join in. Oh, Tribor is another one who like I don't feel ever really become actual characters. Like they are a part of the team, but you don't really get the same intimate moments that you got with season one characters. They're part of the team, but you don't really feel their relationship with the other characters as much, or like really know them beyond their like character tropes. Really, like we do kind of get that offshoot story with Ash, but it like then doesn't really go anywhere. Like it doesn't have the same impact that I think these moments had in season one. And then the pacing is also like so different, because like season one was so fast paced, and I felt like besides the like weird offshoot jokes, a lot of it was like this momentum towards the plot. And then season two feels like it has way more filler.
Yeah, season two feels a lot more episodic. Season two feels like the execs sat down and said, we want this show to be more Family Guy, Rick and Morty-esque, where you can just pick any episode and start it and not need to feel like you need the context of prior episodes. Whereas season one is very much, we're trying to tell a story from start to finish. Even to the point where the beginning of every episode in season one has this sort of scene of Gary's final moments from the finale of season one. And that scene at the beginning of each episode of season one establishes where each episode sort of falls if you were to watch this at seemingly at random. And it gives you this wonder of what is going to happen, and it establishes that we are working towards something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas season two, there are, and I do think some of the more episodic episodes are actually quite good. I think some of the filler episodes do work for me. Like the episode where Lil Cotto is stuck on one half of a temporal rift from the rest of the crew and is sort of hallucinating 60 years of a life with the rest of that crew. I think that episode is quite powerful.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even classify that as filler because that serves a very specific purpose for his character.
That's true. It does establish that, like, this is him coming to terms with his father's death.
Yeah, and, like, those are moments that we don't really get with the new characters who come in season two. So I think that, like, that is an example of an episode that I would say does its job really, really well, where, like, it is working, it has a goal, and the episode works towards that goal, and then it succeeds that goal at the end. And it also, like, helps you understand the characters more and their relationships more, and, like, it gives you something that then matters moving forward. Like, he changes moving forward. His relationship with his dad being dead changes moving forward. Like, you have real growth in that episode.
Like, the fact that a lot of these episodes are episodic and not super as connected as it was in the first season definitely affects the pacing.
Yeah.
And it slows the pacing down. Like, the season one was very fast-paced, but it was, we have a story to tell, and we're gonna, at some points, kind of rush you through it.
Yeah, and then season two, I think, overcorrects.
Yeah.
where it's like, we have a story to tell, but we're going to take our time. Like, I feel like way less happened in season two.
Season two feels more like what you would see, what, or at least what we've seen from a lot of the shows, a lot of the animated shows like this, in the vein of like Steven Universe or Star vs. the Forces of Evil, where you have episodic episodes that don't really do much to continue the plot, and then big things on like either end. And I don't think it's nearly as heavy-handed in this as it is in those shows. I do think that they sprinkle plot throughout a bit more, but it is definitely, we don't trust our viewers to watch from start to finish. We believe that they will watch completely at random, which is an attitude I can absolutely see from TBS, the network that's going to absolutely be showing your Family Guy-esque shows. But I honestly would expect more from Adult Swim, a platform that shows a lot of anime. And you can't really do that with anime.
Yeah, God, no.
I think those pacing issues will be resolved going into season three. I have not seen any of season three that has currently aired, but I do hope that it's good.
Yeah, and I have issues with the show, but I do think that now that the plot is kind of coming into more, like, I am excited about the plot. I'm excited about the relationship. I'm excited that it is a show that is like giving us more of these emotional beats with the fantasy elements. Like, I like a lot of stuff about it. I'm just angry that it has all of these other like grubby fingers that have reached their hand around. It's like, okay, here's today is a metaphor day for me, I guess, but here's how I'm thinking about the show now. It's like you're eating a bowl of pudding and a little kid runs up and like shoves their hand in and scoops him out and like eats it, and you're like, well, I still have this pudding, but now I don't know where like the grubby kid's germs are in it, you know? So like you still have a good thing, but it's also like you're a little bit weary of eating it because parts of it could be gross. That's kind of how I feel about the show.
Yeah. I don't hate that metaphor.
Yeah, like I think that lands for me. 'Cause at the end of the day, like I'll still eat the pudding. Not
Puddin's puddin'.
pudding is pudding. I'll still watch the show. I just would have much rathered the kid not come and scoop some out in the first place, you know?
Yeah. Where do you land on Gary's mother? And do you feel that that redemption was in any way earned?
Oh God, no. I thought that was like a totally super quick 180 turn that made no sense with her character and like felt it was like way too fast. And it also like actively didn't make any sense because we understand canonically that like she thinks that like she has been told by a Titan who like pulled her out of a terrible depression that Bolo is evil and that giving the keys to that Titan will allow her to see her husband again. And then like we're expected to believe that out of nowhere she's like, "Oh no, Bolo's the good guy. It's okay. Like sure I'll trust you,
No,
people who
it's,
I
I don't
don't
think
know."
it's that. I think it's that we're expected to believe that out of nowhere she can conceive of spending the rest of her life with Gary as a replacement to getting John back.
Yeah, but what about Bolo? Like, does she not think that releasing him is a bad idea because he's supposed to be evil? Like, is that not a concern? Is it just because, oh, well, my son thinks he's good, so he must be because now I trust my son?
I think there's enough established that we don't really, at least the characters in the show don't really have a full grasp as to whether or not either of them are evil.
Okay, well, that's fair, but I also still think that it happened way too fast.
Oh, absolutely. I don't disagree with that. I think in terms of like what is happening too fast is what I am disagreeing with. I do not disagree that it
Oh, okay.
happened too fast. I think if I had literally like one moment prior to that therapy session that they had, where Gary's mother thinks in some or establishes in some way that they might be doing the wrong thing, I'd be much more on board with it. Like, if there was just a seed of doubt planted, and this was,
Yeah.
we are growing that seed and nurturing that seed, as opposed to, we're just gonna establish that you're going to change sides now, I
Yeah.
think I would be much more on board.
Okay, I have another question, and this could have been that I just completely missed this and it was explained, or that it was not explained, but I probably just missed something. But help me clarify the timeline. So Gary's dad finds out that Cheryl was lying and says, like, get out. and Gary is still a little kid, right? Gary was like a baby.
Yes.
That is the end of his mom being in his life, correct? She's gone after that. Because he says, get out.
I mean, yeah, no, that makes sense.
And then suddenly she's back during the funeral, even though we know she's been in prison for a really long time. Because we have a weird flashback where, like, Gary's mom is crying and he's, like, a teenager. Or, like, he's, like, the kid, however old he was when his dad died. And she's there at the funeral. And then she sees him in the house, like, sobbing and getting super drunk. And then she leaves and he goes off and, like, lives in his treehouse or whatever. But, like, that... So does she come back then for that moment and then leave again? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. What happened there?
You know, I hadn't considered that timeline until you
okay,
brought
it up. I didn't miss something.
I don't believe this literally doesn't make sense. I think in my head it was, like, she left, but... She never really, like, she hadn't become a wanton criminal at that point. She had just left.
Which is fine.
Like, she had not, like, the prison thing happened much later on the timeline. And I think that was more, Gary recognized his mother at his father's funeral.
Okay, which is fine. But it could have even established a timeline.
Yeah, I think the show needed a lot more space to establish a lot of things.
Yeah, it also then...
And a lot of space to establish some less things.
Yeah, and then it also takes away the impact of her pain, for me, the fact that she was with him for 6 months, and then completely out of his life for, like, I don't know, 7 years while Gary was growing up, and then was, like, totally... I mean, yes, okay, totally, like, torn apart when he passed away, which is legitimate and fine, but, like, that would have had... I would have understood her shift so much more if she had been a part of that relationship for, like, for the whole time, you know?
Yeah. Or at least the relationship with Gary, not necessarily with John.
Yeah. Like...
Yeah, no, I get that.
I don't know. It just, like, felt... It felt weird and... I don't know. Also, it, like, lessened my understanding of her affection for him that she continued to feed information throughout their relationship. Because, like, at the point where she's giving the information about what he's doing to her boss, they've been together for 6 months and have a kid. And that's the moment that we are expected to understand is the end of their relationship. So at the end of their relationship, she has still not grown or changed enough to not actively do things that will harm him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, I have not been given anything to see her affection for him or to understand or justify any of the actions that she takes after he dies.
I think that's exactly where I land on that as well. I think if there was literally, like, one scene, just one moment where Gary's mother just shows any sign of regret for what she's done.
Yeah, or even if, like, her last moment is not answering the call. Like, if that last moment
yes.
had been... them calling her and her not answering it, and then, like, her putting the phone down and, like, her husband seeing the call come up and, like, make the connection in his head and think that she had been feeding the information, but she had actually, like, we as an audience know that she has made the decision to try to sever that relationship, that would have been more impactful. Which, again, is, like, another small, tiny choice that if they had just made that little change, I would have felt completely different about her character. I still probably would have thought that she came around too fast, but, like, that little moment, if it had just been done slightly differently, could have worked way better.
That being said, that therapy session that Cheryl went through, I did cry during that. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah, I did not, but I did.
It was pretty emotional.
Like, I did, like, openly weep when Avocado died, and I was watching during my breakfast right before work, so I did very much have to, like, quickly wipe my tears and, like, drive to my job after unexpectedly sobbing for, like, the first time. I also think that I cried when Gary's dad died, which was, like, the first or second episode when we see that moment when he's given Mooncake the caterpillar and his dad goes up and, like, explodes. That made me cry.
I believe we see that moment on multiple occasions.
Yeah, but the first time we see it, I think it was, like, super early on. It was one of the first couple episodes.
Yeah, I believe it was episode one where he gives him the caterpillar and then goes off and then explodes. Yeah.
Yeah, so that made me, like, tear up. And I was like, whoa, okay, not ready for that.
So
and
this
then
show,
Avocado made me just, like, straight up sob.
This show, when it needs to hit its emotional beats, it does it so well. To the point where I believe there are multiple points in this show where I genuinely cried. Like it wasn't even like, oh, this is a one-off moment. This was like several times.
Yeah, it is really, really good at establishing these moments of care between characters and devastation when a character is hurt because of a loss. So like they know how to do it. And they just, like, don't so often, which, again, is frustrating. But it still doesn't diminish from the fact that when they do it incredibly well.
Yeah. And I think even with the side characters in season two, they do a good job of it. I did genuinely cry at the end of the Ash episode where Ash was, like, just coming to terms with being able to say her final goodbyes to her sister.
Yeah, that was an impactful moment too.
Also establishing that there is someone else on this crew that she can connect to in some way and not just on a superficial level.
Yeah, which again is something that I wish we had spent more time on, because that really great conversation that Ash has with Nightfall, where like Nightfall is like, was that Lil Kato? Wait,
which conversation are you talking about?
Okay, the one where Nightfall tells her.
I think that Ash has a very good conversation with both Nightfall and Lil Kato in that episode.
Okay, I was talking about the one with Nightfall.
Okay.
Where Nightfall tells her, like, these powers are maybe you have them for something that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, that was Nightfall.
Like that, yeah, okay. Because I was trying to think about it, and, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but we do not get a whole lot of conversations or relationship building between the women in this show, like, at all. We get a lot with the men, but, like, Nightfall doesn't really have another woman that she has a lot of emotional moments with.
Is this where we need to talk about the Bechdel test?
Well, I mean, maybe, but it just like it irks me because it's like, okay, you have these female characters here. I think that Quinn is a great character. I think that Ash has potential to be a super great character. I'm just like, it makes me angry when they do such a fantastic job of building these relationships and they cannot bother to build these fantastic, positive, impactful relationships between the women. They're always with a male character, right? Like, we have Quinn and we have Gary. We have Hugh, I guess, and we have Ava. We have Ash and, I mean, we kind of have her and Lil Kato, and we also kind of have moments with her and her brother, and we have that one moment with Nightfall, but, like, that's kind of it. And then we have Cheryl, who's a bad guy up until the very, very end. And she develops her relationship with her son. And that's about it. And then we have like the random other female character, I guess Shannon, who's like obsessed with Tribor. But she's not really a character. And I think she's the only like female side character. Like most of the other side characters we have, the Titans, the like little spider guys, most of the other ones are all just men. I guess we have like the queen and that one weird offshoot episode with Clarence, which made me wildly uncomfortable. But like,
yeah, no, that no.
Like I'm just it. Like they know how to build relationships, and I also understand how important it is to have a show where you get to see men be vulnerable with one another and have relationships at different capacities, because you have like the canonical father-son relationships. You have Gary and Lil Kato, where you have kind of like this found paternal relationship. You have the friendships he develops. You have all of the, you have the romantic things with them and the women, but then you don't get to see that with the women. And it just like that I also would like to see, because when they build relationships, but they build them really, really well. They just don't put the effort into doing it with all of the characters. And I think that they should, and they could, and they have the time for it if they would just take away some of the stupid shit that they don't need.
Did you like the one family that Gary keeps killing the mother of?
No, I hate that. I hate that joke. That is a stupid joke, and I don't like it.
I didn't like it at first, because that's one of the early episodes, and I felt it was very distasteful, and like it was like what, episode 2 or 3 when that happens initially. But I kind of enjoyed the callbacks to it.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I guess it's nice to have that connective thread of, like, a joke that they keep coming back to. I just wish that that wasn't the joke. Because I think reoccurring jokes are great, and it's also kind of fun when you have something that you, like, step away from, and then when it comes up, you're like, hey, and it's, like, a little inside joke that you get with the show.
But it's, like, even in the time travel episode where they were like, this is all purposeful. Like, this was all Gary.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I just, like, I don't know. I think there are a couple of jokes that I found really funny. The cute little moments where Mooncake is being adorable, which I find very enchanting. The moment where Hugh and Mooncake, like, give back the 10,000, whatever the currency is, money to the police, and then the police give them a 50,000 reward, and they're like, we get 50,000 for returning 10,000, and they're like, that's why our economy is in shambles. And I just thought that was like unbelievably hysterical. And then they gave him a hat. They were like, this is also the reward. And he got like the fancy hat. That was that, like, that made me laugh out loud. And there's also the moment with Tribor where he's talking about, like, he's part of the resistance, and then there's the rebellion, and then there's the insurgency, and he's like talking with somebody else in the rebellion, and they're like, the insurgency has come to the rebellion, and we have to act now, or the like other thing. And they're just using all of these terms that you usually get in, like, you know, like Star Wars-y shows and like political intrigue shows. And but like it just all means nothing, and like none of it is grounded in anything that's happened in the show, and it's clearly like satirizing those things. And that was a moment that I thought was super funny, but like most of the other jokes I didn't quite land with me, except for the balloon joke in the pilot, which I also think is hysterical.
And the pilot shows a lot of the strengths of the show. I think a lot of what makes that pilot good are the exact things that I really enjoy in the show proper. The let's make this timer about cookies and not my impending death is something that is horribly morbid and very light and fluffy at the same time, and it works with the tone of the show very well.
Yeah, and I think this is interesting, so I'm gonna kind of try to build a connection and let's see if it makes sense. But like, that is a moment in the show that makes sense because it's directly addressing a character's sort of inability, or, you know, obvious want to not connect with the terror of what is happening, right? So like, Gary doesn't want to think about the fact that he has 4 minutes left of life, so instead he's going to think about he has 4 minutes left to tail a cookie, right? That makes sense, but I think a lot of the humor in the show does that thing for the benefit of the audience in a way that then takes away from the emotional impact because we didn't ask for it. So there are all of these moments where you have this like emotional scene where characters have been reunited and are hugging and are like having this moment of intimacy, and then it like pans to all of the Kevins in space being frozen and like saying weird Kevin stuff. Or like you have a moment where something emotional has happened, and then like a character says something and draws you away from that into this place of humor. And it feels kind of like it's doing that same thing of being like, here is this thing that is emotional and impactful, and we're gonna try to give you this levity to make it more consumable. But like, in the context of Gary, he asked for it, and me as an audience member, like, I didn't ask for that. I don't want that right now. I want the time to sit with the emotional thing that's happening. I don't need Kevin to come in and like say something dumb.
Or Gary to just yell for no reason.
Yeah, like...
And that's my thing with this show, is that this show somehow simultaneously has some of the best and most well-established tonal shifts, while at the same time having some of the worst and, oh my god, how did we think this was a good idea, tonal shifts that I've seen in any show. Like, the fact that this show can go from, like, oh, we went on this fun space adventure, and then, oh my god, avocado's dying, to a pissing contest to determine whether or not we're someone's property.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the metaphor that you initially made is, like, the most apt metaphor that we have. Like, it is very clear that we have multiple talented individuals working on this that all want completely opposite things from the show. And it is, it tears the fabric of the show as you do that.
Yeah, completely.
Like, I cannot for the life of me think of a show that I've been genuinely brought to tears to that I've also had moments that I genuinely hated as much as I have.
Yeah.
The roller coaster of emotions that I've had towards this show has been absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's not like roller coaster where you're like, whoa, what a wild ride, like, oh my god. It's roller coaster like, I love this, I hate this, I love this, I hate this, I love this, I hate this, my god, why?
And it's honestly, like, very little of it is in the middle. I don't think there's ever an episode that I was like, oh, this is just kind of eh. It's either I genuinely love what's happening on screen, or I genuinely dislike what's happening on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very polarizing.
It's. Alright, here's my final note. This is what you would get if you were to animate Doctor Who and make it a soap opera.
Oh my god. I disagree, but I'll give it to you.
Like, it does kind of have that, like, soap opera-esque style of storytelling where it's like, oh my god, my brother was my father all this whole time. Like, your Titan isn't good, my Titan's the good one. This Titan is the one that's actually good. I don't know. It feels like, I don't know. I don't know how to phrase it.
I think that kind of sums it up though. Like, we're both trying to talk about it and we're like, but we don't quite know how. Because I don't think I've ever really encountered something like this where I feel so like polarized about it and where I also have such a hard time verbalizing what I dislike and what I like and how they connect. Like, it's just a really weird thing to talk about. It's really hard.
But that's exactly why I wanted to talk about it too, because I think that this style of show is very, it makes for good content, you know? Like, we have plenty to talk about because there is plenty good and plenty bad about the show.
Yeah, and I think for me it was interesting watching this off coming off of Invincible because both of them I went into just kind of not quite expecting to really, really like just because of sort of what you set me up with.
I mean, I
With
gave you
Invincible,
absolutely nothing for this
you
one.
gave me nothing about Final Space, but I did look up some images and I did think it was about space zombies and I do not like zombies, so I was expecting to not like it, which is a very, like, I went into it expecting not to like it for something that has literally nothing to do with the show, but I did kind of go into it, like, not initially being super thrilled about it. And with Invincible, I went into it with kind of this similar attitude that I did Final Space, but I absolutely loved it. And so I was kind of expecting to go into this with the same thing because I was like, oh, Andy knows my taste super well. You've done a fantastic job with picking things that push me out of my comfort zone, but I also then really like. So I was expecting that with Final Space. And then when I watched it, I was like, but why is this such a mixed bag though? Like, it was like this weird thing where I went into it being like, well, I don't think I'm going to like it because of what I know. But I also think I'm going to like it because Andy told me to watch it. And then it
But
was this weird.
this is also very reassuring because it does mean that I do know your tastes because I
Oh,
explicitly gave you
absolutely.
Invincible because I thought you would genuinely enjoy it. And I'm explicitly giving you this one because I thought this is a mixed bag and there are definitely some good things that we could definitely talk about here. But oh my god, there are some bad things about this show.
Oh yeah, no, you are spot on. It's like kind of terrifying, but I trust you with every ounce of my being when it comes to shows. Like, if you say I'll like something, I'll be like, yup. And if there's something I want to watch and you're like, no, Nadia, I don't think you'd like that, I'd be like, all right.
Okay.
Like, won't try it then.
I don't
You're
think I should
right.
have that much power.
Well, now I feel like I shouldn't have told you that because while I trust you with my show preferences, I don't know if I trust you with power.
I have not seen any of season three. I purposefully kept myself blind to it so that we could discuss the future of this show without me sitting back on spoilers.
I appreciate that.
Because I know we've done that with other shows. What I
Yes.
have seen of season three is I have watched the trailer, and from my understanding of it, the final chase sequence that they ended the cliffhanger on in the end of season two leads to them being stranded in inner space. And at least from the beginning of it would be them attempting to get off.
Makes sense. That
Which,
tracks.
if the entire season is them trying to get out of that, I think it would lead to a much more cohesive storyline. Since there isn't the whole we're gonna go from one planet to one planet to one planet to one planet kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there, I think that it establishes a lot of interesting relationships that we can really delve into because this is the first time that we get to see the Cottos truly together. Because,
Yeah.
like, prior to this, it was we finally saved Lil' Cotto, and then Avocado dies, and then we finally save Avocado from his impending death into he doesn't have memory, and then when he finally gets his memory back, he immediately gets infected by Invictus, and then this is the first time that we actually will get to see time spent with these two characters, and I think that's a very interesting relationship to delve into.
Yeah, and Gary and Cheryl.
Yeah, I was about to say that as well. Like, I think this is the first time that we're going to get actual character development between Gary and Cheryl, and I think this season could do a lot to fix the issues that we have with Cheryl's redemption, if it's written well enough, if it does a good job of establishing, like, no, Cheryl is still a bad person and is still working on these things and has done this one good act to try and put herself in a position where she can continue to be a good person, or maybe this is her means of trying to, like, there are a number of different ways that this could go, and I am genuinely interested in how they write that.
Yeah, I'm excited. And if they have that one, like, unified goal too, then hopefully it will unify the show. And while you have that plot that is unraveling, it gives a little bit more time to do character development. And we also get to see Ash and Fox without Clarence, which I'm super psyched for because I hated Clarence, and I was incredibly happy with the way that they dealt with his lack of a retribution arc, because that was one of those things where he was like, he did a bunch of stuff that was super shitty for shitty reasons that weren't justified in the explanation, and then he did one thing that wasn't even really good, it was just shitty to the people that they didn't like and expected it to be enough, and it was like, no, you know what, it's not enough, sorry, bye. So I did like the way that was dealt with, and I do really want to see more character stuff from Ash and Fox, and I hope that we get that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I do really like Ash and Fox as concepts. I think we got a lot more from Ash than we got from Fox in season two.
Yeah, we've got, like, nothing from Fox, really.
I just really like, was it Ron Funges who voices Fox?
I just think he's adorable. Like, I just think he's such a little cutie, and I also just, like, as a person, I enjoy when characters have, like, purpose, and they're really just kind of background at this point, and I'm ready for them to become more influential, the other characters,
yeah, I
and
think,
the plot and all that good stuff.
I think this show definitely benefits from having, like, because it is all about these relationships and it is all about these found family, it definitely benefits from having strong relationships between all of the side characters that you have, and especially if we're going to be spending some amount of time with them in this sort of remote destination, it definitely gives them the ability to really flesh that out.
Yeah.
And Olin Rogers himself has come out and said that season three is really where the show is at its best.
Oh, that's very exciting. I'm looking forward to that. I am genuinely excited to continue watching the show. Like, I know we've spent a lot of time criticizing that, and I think that that's an important thing when you consume stuff, but also, like, that doesn't mean that it doesn't have these fantastic moments, and it also doesn't mean that it doesn't have time to grow into something better, right?
Like, oh, absolutely.
This is definitely this is the first time that he's done a show. This is, in many ways, like, a jumping off point for what he's capable of as a creator. And I think that is important to note. And I also think that there are a lot of shows where the first couple of seasons are not great and it picks up. And I think this, hopefully, will be able to do that, because I think it has a lot of potential. It's just, again, buried under the threads that aren't able to unify with a singular goal.
Yeah. And I would honestly have to say that for the most part, the show is good. I think that the negatives that we have tend to be sprinkled throughout, but, like, the skeleton of the show, the structure that makes up the show itself is there, and it is solid.
Yeah.
Well, so I think that wraps up our thoughts on Final Space, seasons 1 and 2. I do hope to discuss this once season 3 has been fully released and we can really delve into that.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, with that, we have been Animation Meditation. You can find us at AnimedPod on Gmail and Twitter. Please feel free to reach out to us about any of the things we've discussed earlier today. Next episode, we will be discussing Raya and the Last Dragon. Well, it's been a pleasure. Goodbye.
Bye!